Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Happy Last of Us Day, Josh Brown, in the UK at least.
Scott Tilford, I've been waiting for this day maybe my entire life. Certainly since I played the first game and envisioned a movie.
10 years ago.
I cannot wait to get home to order some food, to shut the blinds, and to watch The Last of Us. Hopefully it's not a disappointment, but I was checking some early reviews this morning and some impressions from the audience, and it seems like it's going to be pretty good.
Do you know what I wish? I wish that the UK audience had it in time with the American audience, because this reminds me of every single week Game of Thrones was on, and everyone gets to watch it apart from us for a day, and the whole day you've just got to avoid, I mean, we know what's going to happen for the spoilers, but you've just got to avoid everything for a whole day. And I have this every week with wrestling, and I hate it.
It's annoying as well. Like, why just a day? Day means it's meaningless in the grand scheme of things. However, I do think it is payment for all of those years where we got the Marvel movies a day in advance. You know, we got to see stuff like, you know, I'm pretty sure we got the big Avengers movies a day in advance, which was always
first,
very strange to have that knowledge. But still, I'd rather
still
have
bad.
The Last of Us. I'd rather have The Last of Us, to be honest.
Yeah, I'd much rather have just some sort of synchronized release thing. I guess they don't want, like, if they had it at 9 o'clock for us, we're like 8 hours ahead of America or whatever.
Some
of
America. To be fair, you could have stayed up till 2 a.m. to watch it in sync with the American audience, but you chose not to do that.
No, I'm still living in a... I still go back and forward on whether I want to pay Now TV $11.99 every month to watch, because it's like $11.99 for 4 episodes of The Last of Us a month. Why is there not a Last of Us subscription, Josh?
Well, here's the thing. Was it not $11.99 for 3 months, you were telling me this morning?
$11.99 for 6 months.
Well, there you go. You'll cover The Last of Us and more with that. It's only a 9-episode show.
Well, it's $11.99 every month, though.
Is that true?
Yeah, for 6 months.
That can't
I mean, I only
right.
want it for two.
Is that
right? I want it for 2 months and 1 week, because I want to just watch The Last of Us and nothing else, and then get rid of Now TV again.
Then just give it, then cancel it. You don't need to sign up for 6 months.
I think I'm going to have to.
I'm going to give you some financial advice right now, live on air. You don't need to pay for 6 months. Just get it for 2 months and then cancel it. It'll be a worthy investment for The Last of Us, and you can watch Curb Your Enthusiasm while you're there. That's on
very,
TV.
Very true. I think I'm going to end up doing that, because the curiosity is too great. Initially, I wasn't bothered about The Last of Us, and I still don't know what I am thinking, but I do like the idea that it's a bit of a moment in time. I feel like gaming's having its sort of Game of Thrones moment. Where, like, obviously, yes, there are stellar video game adaptations from, you know, beforehand, obviously Castlevania, Arcane, Detective Pikachu, whatever. I like Uncharted as well. But still, we've never had something that is week to week, a lot of people tuning in. Obviously, the nearest comparison is The Witcher, but we didn't know what story that was going to be. This is almost like a specific retelling of something where millions of us who grew up with this thing or love this thing are going to watch, like, a whole new audience get into it. And there's a whole thing we should do, maybe a whole separate conversation video on this at some point, because there's the whole thing about, does it break the video game curse? And it's like, that's been broken decades ago.
Here's the thing. People, I mean, we'll we'll talk about this hopefully on Wednesday's podcast, because yes. I'm going to try my best to get you to watch it and to get James Dowse to watch it and do a podcast on the opening episode and then do one on the finale when we can talk about it as a whole. And hopefully I'll do some videos in between.
I was going to say, you've got a nice little set of videos perhaps. Coming in between.
Yes, I certainly do. hopefully it's green enough to justify all of that. You anyway, but what you were saying there about there's a break the video game curse, seeing a lot of discourse about that.
I know.
And a lot of people, obviously, and fairly pushing back, saying, you know, we've got Arcane, we've got Castlevania, we've got all of those great shows.
Silent Hill nailed it.
Did it? I'm a big fan of Silent Hill, but it didn't break the video game curse. It's a good movie.
It's fine.
It's fine, exactly. We haven't had something like you were saying there, something massive that everyone's into that's really, really good that people are following on week from week in live action. We've had it in animated form.
Yeah, that's the annoying part.
We have not had it in live action. Yeah. And I'm saying that as someone who loves the Paul W.S. Anderson Resident Evil movies, but it's just not the same thing.
I feel like the video game curse thing, and I should very quickly say, this is the wind of I'm Scott Tilford, you're Josh Brown. We go over the latest talking points, the latest video game industry stuff, and we do have a whole bunch of news to get into. But super quickly, before I get to everything else that I've got written down, that whole video game curse thing came from Uwe Boll's run of movies. Like when he was doing Far Cry and Blood Rain and all those things in a row where they were just terrible. And obviously before that, you had the Mario Brothers movie. There was definitely a precedent set for terrible video game movies.
Yeah.
However, I would say that even Silent Hill, the original, the 2005 one, is still leagues above those movies. Not that Silent Hill is even a 4.5-star, 5-star movie, but it's well made. It has intent. It's not cheap and whatever. Like if the video game curse is attached to a certain bar of quality.
Yeah.
Silent Hill is at least above that. And I feel like we just never acknowledge that anything ever got better.
No, it is true. That is better. But you also have to remember at the time, Silent Hill wasn't well reviewed and it wasn't liked by fans either. I was a Silent Hill fan at the time.
Same.
And I remember like going on forums and people complaining that they had changed things from the game, they didn't get things right. You know, it was always a punchline to internet reviewer, YouTubers, jokes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, we like Silent Hill now, but it's more of a retrospective thing, I would say. And more
I might get
point,
a t-shirt made. I always liked Silent Hill. I was Chris McGanns, I was there for you, mate.
Well, that's good. But I would say, when I see people say, we're going to break the video game curse, I like to think it's more indicative of a trend rather than a one-off. Because yes, things have broken the video game curse in the past, but nothing has really set a precedent that other people have kind of followed. Yes, we got Silent Hill, but then we immediately got, you know, a bunch of bad Resident Evil movies. We got the second Silent Hill movie, and we got Prince of Persia, we got Assassin's Creed. When I see someone say it breaks the video game curse, I'm taking that to mean it's setting the bar, and hopefully it will inspire a wave of other good
you know the thing
video game adaptations.
That is infuriating is that we have to leapfrog. I hate that people leapfrog animation. They just go, oh, Arcane just doesn't count, even though that was incredible. And Castlevania just doesn't count because it's animation. That's so sickeningly infuriating. Not towards you, but that general sort of conversation of like, oh, it just doesn't matter. We're still waiting. Video game curse is still a thing. It's like, no. It was broke years ago.
Yeah.
Like, and those properties are immaculately transferred. Like, especially in Castlevania's case. Well, especially in Arcane's case. But they just don't count because they're not live action. And even then, I would point to something like Detective Pikachu. I guess towards the end of that, it gets a bit messy. But it's very, very well made. We've both grown up with the, oh my God, the video game curse. And it's like, have we not moved on at all for like 20 years?
It's true. And I do definitely get those frustrations. I would say that animation is a different medium and different when it comes to video game adaptations. I'd say it's probably easier to get right in animation because you can more accurately mimic the the style of the original game and even kind of like the structure and the formula of the original game. Whereas it's harder to get right in live action, not necessarily because it's harder to translate into live action, but because the hoops you have to jump through to get anything made in live action, I would say are arguably harder than animation.
Like, true.
Think of how long The Last of Us has been optioned as an adaptation. I've said that word so many times, it's losing meaning. But it was originally, you know, going to be a movie, then it wasn't, then it was in development hell, then it wasn't, then it was a TV show. Think of how long it took Uncharted to get made in live action.
Yeah, like, that's true.
That thing was in development for so long, Mark Wahlberg went from being Nathan Drake to being Sully. If that was an animated show, you would imagine it would be a faster turnaround, quote-unquote, easier to get made. Not to say that it doesn't take a lot of effort to get those animated shows made and to get them as good as they are, but I do think they are two different kettle of fish, and it's harder to break the video game curse in live action than it is to break in animation.
That's true. There's also, I mean, going forward, film and TV is different mediums anyway, so we'll still get we've never had a truly great movie, so it doesn't really count, but like all this Last of Us stuff is clearly getting that buzz going again, although most of it really stemmed from that one Polygon article who had it in the headline. saying it finally breaks the video game curse. And then people like me going, it's been broken for years. There's so much stuff that we just don't talk about. And all the ongoing stuff with Hollywood's general sort of representation of animation and the conversations around that. And just being like, oh my God, can we just recognize quality? Like, yes. For the love of God, like, just what are we doing? Anyway, I'm very nicely wound up now.
I love this. Yes. Because this wasn't what the podcast was going to be
no,
about.
Not at all.
We've got like 8 things written down, and this wasn't one of them.
No. So we'll get through some of the most breaking news stories and things doing the rounds in the industry. As Josh fights his microphone.
Good God.
To stay on topic. To talk more about The Last of Us. So yeah, the first thing is the Callisto Protocol coming in way under expectations. And this is according to Korean website MK Odyssey, saying that the game cost $162 million, going alongside analyst firm Samsung Security saying, and I quote, the company expected cumulative sales of around 5 million copies, but considering the current sales ranking, whatever that is, cumulative sales of only 2 million copies are what they're targeting for this year. So it's way, way under. They said that 2 million copies has not been easy until 2023, but even then, whatever that sales number is drastically under what it should be. And even titles like Resident Evil 8 only brought in around 5 to 6 million as well. So for a new IP to get anywhere near that is climbing uphill. Ice skating uphill, in the words of Blade.
Very good.
Thank you.
Glenn Schofield must be haunted by the phrase 5 million copies, because if you recall, Scott Tilford,
I do.
5 million copies was what Dead Space 3 needed to sell in order for that to continue as a franchise.
Right.
It did not hit it, then Dead Space died. So it is incredibly ironic and incredibly just poetic in a terrifying way, I suppose, that they expected the Callisto Protocol to sell 5 million copies as well to justify its existence. And that was fighting an even bigger uphill battle, in my opinion, than Dead Space 3. Dead Space at the time was at least an established franchise. And like you were saying there, you know, for the likes of Resident Evil, it's maybe difficult to get to 5 million within the first year or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the idea that was the number for Callisto, to me, was almost setting it up for a fail. Then obviously the reviews certainly didn't help, and I played through it myself finally last week to completion. And man, like, if I had bought that full price, even
I'm sitting
in its,
over right across the room from me.
Yeah, even in its patch state, which I'll get into more about the differences of that soon. Yeah. But if I bought that first price in full price and didn't get it as a Christmas present, I would have been incredibly, incredibly disappointed. Mm-hmm. And while I would recommend the Callisto Protocol to diehard horror fans,
right,
I would not recommend it at full price. I would wait for a heavy discount and jump in, because it is a 6 out of 10, a 7 out of 10 bland fest that only took me 7 hours to complete, and I was doing everything that I could. You know, I was going through it in a lethargic way.
The thing is, like, that not only did I buy it full price, I bought it at midnight. I've been looking forward to it all year long. I listened to the Callisto Protocol podcast. I, for a time, was like, oh, it's kind of cool, because the way that Glenn Schofield exited EA, he was very public about, like, just very much like F EA. Like, I'm done with them. They trapped me, like, insert word, and I'm just done with them. And I don't think he was that involved in Dead Space 3 because of that. I think he'd gone by that point, but I could be wrong. Maybe they were just following various notes that he left behind or whatever. But either way, you want to believe that someone who broke away from a big corporate entity and has this much money behind them, you know, could do something incredible with it. And I kind of want to hold up Callisto's marketing as the way to do it, because I, like, in theory, because obviously some of this is going to be sort of scrutinized because it didn't actually deliver on the sales front, but you still have this podcast that fleshed out the world. You had him doing all sorts of interviews on Variety and Ars Technica and getting out there. Like, a lot of people knew the name Glenn Schofield last year that they didn't beforehand. And that whole idea of, like, pivoting off Dead Space and going, like, that's just the corporate thing. They're remaking it because that's the easy thing to do. I'm the future. I'm the guy, and, like, stick with me, and this is the future, Callisto Protocol, whatever. And then for the game to just be so crushingly disappointing. And I think there's, like, sparks of hope, Mario, in terms of the way the combat works. Well, you can have fun with it, and you can pick dudes up telekinetically and fling them at parts of the environment, but it's so, like, it's like a one-tenth of that experience you're actually having fun. Most of the rest of it is terrible world-building, terrible dialogue, like, just a terrible general sense of pace to it, and abysmal level design, where you're just inching through it, you're squeezing through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it doesn't even need to load anything, but it just is, because an entire corridor is just a set of squeezers, which we're more and more sick of these days.
It's funny, because we've almost played two different versions of the same game. Mm. You played it at launch, and I know you have played it since the patch went live, you know, the big patch that changed things, but you got it in its most frustrating form, right?
Yeah.
Where the combat was more or less broken, where it was cheap, where you were getting killed all the time, it just wasn't fun. Mm-hmm. I got the sanitized version of it, where the combat was too easy, because they changed a lot of it and made dodging easier, give you more invincibility frames, or indeed give you any invincibility frames. To the point where bosses, you can literally just hold right on the stick and you will dodge everything that comes in, and there's no challenge to it at all. So the version that I played wasn't necessarily bad, but it was incredibly bland. It was incredibly boring. For a 7-hour experience, I had very few memorable encounters. I thought the combat was just unfun. The stealth was broken to the point where it didn't, as long
stealth
as you were
crouching.
Stealth
didn't feel viable at all to me.
Well, it felt too viable for me, Scott Tilford. Maybe it's because of the patch, but I could literally walk up to a set of three monsters that were more or less shoulder to shoulder and stealth kill each one without them being alerted. Like, it was just broken to that level.
I tried to sneak it behind a guy and it just didn't give me the stealth prompt. The stab prompt. I was like, okay, cool. That was before the patch. But
This is it. Two very different versions of the same game. But the versions that we did kind of, or the things and the features that we did share were the story, were the pacing. And that, to me, was one of the biggest disappointments. Like, I wasn't expecting too much from the story itself. Mm. But it just felt like it had chunks of it cut out. And I was trying to theorize why it felt like so much was missing, so much connective tissue was just kind of overlooked, so many character shifts and their motivations just seemingly changed on a dime. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether it was, and this is my tinfoil hat theory, because it was originally supposed to be connected to the PUBG universe, and then we realized that it wasn't, and they announced last year that actually they'd broken it off to become its own thing. I wonder whether the stuff that feels jarring is because that was the stuff more directly tied to the PUBG mythos. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just trying to find excuses for why it feels dodgy.
The way that it ends, I guess I'm not going to spoil the way that the Callisto Protocol ends, although I think anyone who really cares about it has finished it at this point, but the grand reveals that you get towards the end, the reason why the prison exists, its location in the galaxy, what they're trying to do with that general sort of setup and everything else, that would still bolt onto a PUBG, any battle royale scenario, the idea of like why so many humans are being involved in something and one being picked for a reason after that. Like, you could still, like, I still see the seeds of that in there. But like, yeah, that whole idea of it being this sort of PUBG spin-off and whatever, it's like that never really worked for them. And I guess they had to sort of siphon it off. But that was the one part of the marketing that they didn't really make that clear. And then at some point last year, it was just sort of, did you hear it's not in the PUBG universe anymore? All right, okay, I guess someone somewhere said that, and that wasn't the case anymore. But yeah, I'm just fascinated by it. For me, it gets almost everything right, apart from every core part of the experience.
Right.
Like, I think it looks beautiful. I think a lot of the, it's very atmospheric, and I think a lot of the lighting effects are great. The photo mode, I had a lot of fun taking really gory photos in it, and just the animation quality is incredible for the most part. And even things down to, like, the way the DualSense works on PS5, like, even on the menus, it has, like, very light sort of, you know, you can feel you're moving through a menu, and it's like, that's an extra level of dev time or dev consideration that a game under endless crunch or whatever might not have been able to get around to. And I was like, you're getting everything right apart from the fundamentals. And it's just like, it's just kind of this weird, fascinating mess. And so, yeah, like, the state that it's in, there's two more story packs to come. Publisher Krafton, obviously, their stock tanked or whatever because it didn't sell very well. Obviously, right now, we know that it's under the sales targets anyway. So, assumedly, they've already greenlit the story packs, but it's not unprecedented to cancel story stuff because Mass Effect Andromeda, it happened to Mass Effect Andromeda.
True.
So I guess we'll see the rest of this. Yeah.
As much as I, you know, didn't love the experience and found a lot of it quite bland, it is a shame that they won't get the chance, or at least right now, doesn't seem like they're going to get the chance to properly try to improve things with a sequel. Yes, they have the story DLC incoming if it doesn't get cancelled, but I was playing through it thinking, I would like to see what they could do with the sequel, you know, take the feedback on board and properly flesh things out, change some things that that didn't work in the original game, and make The Evil Within 2 to this game's The Evil Within, because the two games that I was reminded of most playing through this title were The Evil Within 1 and Doom 3. And
it's
love
very Doom 3.
It's such Doom 3 in the setting, and I'm a big fan of Doom 3.
I run away from Doom 3.
I know you do.
Get it away from me.
I don't think this is as good as Doom 3 or as good as The Evil Within 1, but it feels like The Evil Within 1 in that there's a lot of good ideas in there, a lot of poorly executed ideas in there, but you can see the path to success. You can see what they can take, what they can leave, how they can morph it, if the developers are, you know, good enough and the direction is there to make something really good with a Callisto Protocol 2. But now it seems like they won't get the chance, and that's a shame. And that's why I would ultimately recommend it at a heavy discount, because I think that, you know, it is beautiful. It is still satisfying enough at times. It just is kind of like It's almost like when you play a Souls-like and you can see right. the bones of a better game. You can see the ideas that have been taken, mm-hmm. but it just doesn't quite have the polish, doesn't quite have the finesse to elevate it to a proper Souls experience. It has some of the tenets of what you enjoy.
Well, that's the thing. It was one of those things where when I was playing through it, I was like, well, I've paid the money. It looks very nice. And you're sort of almost fighting the presentation because you're like, how can something that looks this good and this new gen or whatever be so off-putting and so boring and so bland and rote and everything? And you sort of just get in that weird mind headspace with it where it's like, well, I could just sell this, but I might as well see it through or whatever. And it's that unique thing about gaming where it's like, I am playing something that's undercooked. And because they did that massive patch in the first sort of like week or so where they like sped up the healing animation by literally about like 150% or something. And they added like faster weapon switching and they added all the invincibility frames. And it just felt like immediately they were like, oh God, sorry, no, it wasn't finished. Okay, this is what it needed to be. And then it was just that weird thing of like, well, where's your artistic integrity? Like, was that healing animation a mistake? From the beginning, like, were you always going to speed it up because it's animated to be slow?
Yeah,
and then even in the new one that you have now, it looks like a sped up animation. Like, it just looks weird. And so, like I said, everything around it just felt like that meme of like the big jug of water spouting some leak, and they just slap something on it for now, just to sort of like try and recoup some sales and word of mouth and stuff at launch, and maybe things smooth out across this. Yeah, I kind of there's enough of the combat that I think has promise that I am up for playing the story DLC if it's reviews well or whatever, but if it's just the same game and then the writing is just so abysmal anyway, I just quite like the setup. I quite like what they have by the very end of the game of what the prison is and why it's in that location. I like that enough in the most barest, boring sense possible. I'm like, there's something here. Kinda.
Me too, to be fair. Like, a lot of the reveals on paper, I thought, that's kind of neat. My issue is the only story in the game is in that last hour, chunk. There's nothing before then. It's just a series of roadblocks that you have to overcome. Going out of the sewers. Oh, no. Like, your transport
you're
has been destroyed.
Poo now.
Yeah, you're coming to poo. You're falling through the space station. You need to grab into this vent or whatever.
How does he survive that?
I don't know. Well, how many
is
times?
Is it the suit?
How many times does this game cut to black and then you awaken somewhere else? And it's like, how am I here? How has this character found me? That's what I mean about like the pacing and the it feeling like there has been stuff cut out because those transitions are not smooth at all. And I also want to just shout out my boy Sam Witwer.
Yes.
Because just give him a good game. He's such a good actor, and I think this is probably his worst performance. I like Days Gone, but even that got, you know, the second game got cancelled.
True.
What I mean is, you know, put him in a franchise that's successful and allows him to kind of spread his wings, because he gets about three or four scenes in this entire game, and the final two or maybe even three of those scenes are just him being Dwayne The Rock Johnson after he turns into a demon in Doom,
in the Doom
movie.
The thing is, like,
wasted, man.
Totally. Like, that's the thing I was going to mention. Like, speaking of being wasted, like, you have, and I guess that maybe some of where the money side of it went in, you have this insane cast. And it's not that they were like A-listers. Like, you know, it's like Tom Cruise is popping up in this, but it's a very reliable cast. Like on the podcast, like, I mean, I want to just shout out that Gwendolyn Christie's in that. She's the main character. And her sort of mentor that's looking after her, that's on the other side of the mic, the comms, is Michael Ironside. So it's just like Sam Fisher is backing up Gwendolyn Christie. Like, that's an incredible thing on paper. And I was like, immediately I dove into the podcast. It's terribly written. It's really bad. Avoid it. But I got through all that. And I remember that being the initial warning sign where I was like, oh my God, if this is the level of writing, then oh God, we're in for something. And in the game, you've got Karen Fukuhara, Josh Duhamel, like all these people that are sort of like, I guess they're B-list or whatever you want to call them, but they're beloved. Maybe that's what the B can stand for in this case. They're like, they're beloved, especially in Karen Fukuhara's case. She's from The Boys. I just can't believe how much they had. And they just messed it all up. And I think it's fascinating. How much it was so close to being stitched together, but it's just left open a little bit, and that is a gaping wound at this stage.
I suppose it is a case of you can see where the money's gone.
Yes.
Like, it does feel like a big budget production in terms of the actors that are involved. Like you mentioned, the opulence in the cutscenes, and indeed
very showy.
The general sort of presentation. Like, I think I haven't played the Dead Space remake, but I think Callisto looks better than the Dead Space remake now in terms of its visual presentation and stuff. And that's impressive. It just is what you were saying. Like, they've pumped so much money and gotten so much right, but the fundamentals just are not there, are undercooked, and I don't know why they're undercooked. Mm-hmm. Is it experience in the team? Is it a lack of direction? Is it a lack of time?
Yeah.
I don't have any idea, but it's not there. And the fact that, like you were saying, they were so quick to amend things like The invincibility frames, the healing animation and stuff, to me suggests that it wasn't play tested enough. Rather than it was a proper artistic decision. It was more, or we haven't had enough feedback to properly iterate on these mechanics.
There's also the fact that, I mean, we will move on from this, but it's just like, I just think it's fascinating. Like, if you go down the artistic direction route and the idea of like, you're the dude that did Dead Space, you did Space, what's the next thing you're going to do? And then from the ground up, it's like, well, we're going to have the same telekinetic, grab enemies mechanic. And it's called the same thing. I'm going through Dead Space 2 at the minute and it's the exact same thing. In Callisto, it's still called Grip, but they spell it GRP, whereas in Dead Space 1 and 2, it's just called Grip with an I. And it's just like, okay, I see how you got around that. And it's just like things like that, where it's like you set out to do the exact same thing. You're stomping enemies, you're getting ammunition out of them and stuff. It was just that, it's just such a weird, playing it so safe, but then not doing anything that goes like, this is why you should pay attention to me.
Yes.
As opposed to just, I'm the guy that did Dead Space and I've done a Dead Space again, as if it's 2007 with kind of some basic punch out mechanics and that's about it. Like, that is kind of just it.
I would back that. And again, you know, I really thought I was going to like this game. I thought, you know, I'm playing it after the reviews have come out. I'm playing it in its updated version. I think I could just, you know, go with it and have a good time. And it's a shame that I couldn't, because my expectations were so low and I was still disappointed. It's not the worst game in the world. It doesn't deserve, in my opinion, to be on the worst games of last year lists, but certainly the most disappointing.
I think it might be on ours.
I don't think it is. Okay. I did that one and I left it off.
Oh,
so
okay,
I was like,
it
doesn't deserve to be on the worst, but it deserves to be on the most disappointing, because there's so much potential there. Like, I won't keep going on about it. Like you said, we've been talking about it for a while, but so many things that you bring up but don't develop, like the idea that the implant that your character gets can cause you to kind of like lose track of space and time, have hallucinations. Like, you get one or two, but could that not have been fleshed out more in the actual gameplay? Mm. Kind of like how Dead Space 3 was going to do that same thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
and 2 has that as well.
In 2 has that as well. Give you scenarios where you're not sure if it's real or if your character's imagining it, if there's something going on with the chip. And they kind of pay lip service to it. They pay lip service to a lot of cool ideas, but like I said, don't execute any of them very well. And that's why I would have liked a sequel, because the ideas are there.
Yeah.
The creativity in certain areas is there. You just need to flesh it out. But yeah, it doesn't look like they got to get the opportunity to.
I think they'll, well, hopefully they'll fulfill their season pass stuff. It's kind of interesting now how much they got out ahead of obviously the launch period. Maybe they knew they didn't have a 10 out of 10, but it's like, let's lock down some season pass stuff. Let's lock down an audience that have paid in advance so we can say to our investors and our publisher, hey, we have all these people waiting on stuff. It would look bad for you guys if you cancel it now. And then they can do some story packs and stuff and sort of flesh things out. So I hope that it gets better. I love third-person horror and third-person anything and third-person horror in space especially. And I hope it finds some way to be smoothed over, because there's something here. It's just buried. It's absolutely buried under every other mistake that it makes. Anyway, another piece of news still about Dead Space stuff is a Dead Space movie. Now, John Carpenter, none other than John Carpenter, said in 2022 to the AV Club when being asked about, you know, is there any movies that you might want to adapt? You're a big gamer. Is there anything that you want to actually make into a movie? He said, the only one I can think of, and he has mentioned it before, is Dead Space. That would make a really great movie. I could do that. Recently, he spoke to Variety, and they asked as a general follow-up, so are you doing a bit of a Dead Space? And he said they already have another director involved. So a Dead Space movie is actually happening in a very coy kind of way.
Scott, you think a Dead Space movie might break the video game curse?
It's about time something did. I don't know if anyone's doing anything in 2D animation, but you know, they should probably do something in live action.
That would be cool, man. I wish John Carpenter was involved. Like, I want John Carpenter to come back. He's not done a movie since 2010's The Ward, which was okay.
Okay.
But for me, John Carpenter is, yes, an excellent filmmaker, but he's also just an entertaining filmmaker. Like, for me, even his worst movies are, like, really watchable.
He's what I wish Sam Raimi was.
Oh, that's brutal. That's you just brutalized me to one sentence. Oh, my word.
Other than the Spidey trilogy, first two, not even Spidey trilogy, other than the first two Spidey movies,
no.
I can't get with Sam Raimi.
Not an Evil Dead fan?
No, God, no.
Not a Drag Me to Hell fan?
What a waste of time that was.
Not an Oz the Great and Powerful fan?
I haven't seen that one.
No one else.
Drag Me to Hell, I hated it. I saw Evil Thingy, and I was going to say Evil Within.
Yeah.
Evil Dead, hated it. No, that sort of like, hey, we're terrible, but you'll keep watching. Like, yeah. No, I won't. I'll turn it off.
I mean, I'm going to ignore you slagging off my favorite director of all time for a second now. And you like The Thing, though, right?
John
Carpenter's music, and I know.
Well, I was just thinking, literally one of my favorite films is John Carpenter's The Thing, 1982. And I was just thinking, John Carpenter's soundtracks for the Halloween movies and the EPs that him and his son put out are brilliant. And what if you did John Carpenter's music with Dead Space?
Oh,
maybe they hire him anyway.
They would.
Maybe they bring him in.
I think in that same interview, he talks about how he likes doing scores for things now because he treats it like a carpenter job or something. Mm-hmm. Like he's just fine to go into a movie, you know, do a thing for them and not have to worry about the creative side of it. Here's the music. I don't care if your film's bad. Like, I've done my job.
And they are by far the best part of the new Halloween trilogy as well.
Yes, 100%. Like, I want to see a Dead Space movie, but I wonder whether, you know, I know we have had some animated movies before, but do you double down and go back and make more animated things in the Dead Space world? Do you do a movie? Do you do a TV show? I'm not sure. Like, every time I have a property that I love that gets adapted to live action feature films, it's almost always bad or middle of the road. Mm-hmm. And I would rather take a smaller scale Dead Space TV show.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Or an animated show, maybe, rather than a movie, because there's too much
writing.
It would
be too easy to get this wrong.
That's it.
What was that Cloverfield spin-off?
Cloverfield Paradox, maybe?
Yeah, the one that was in space. Yeah. And it's like, that's what I think the Dead Space live-action thing would end up being if it wasn't in the right hands. But also that whole thing of him saying last year that he's up for it, and then now, they have another director involved. Who have you got? Who have you got that is better than John Carpenter? Remember when Bryan Cranston was like, I'll be Lex Luthor?
Yeah.
And then they just didn't do that, and then they got Jesse Eisenberg in. It's like, what? Who? When? Did you not see what he said?
Well, it's like bloody Dave Bautista wanting to be Marcus Fenix, and they keep going,
we can't do that.
Maybe. He's a great actor.
It's right there.
It's right there. Just do it. Sort
it's
it
an
out.
Open goal. It's the World Cup of stuff.
Yeah.
Just take the shot. Like, what are you doing?
I wonder whether they think John Carpenter's like, maybe not viable in the modern age, because like I say, he's not made a movie in 13 years. That movie didn't do well at the box office. You know, he's made a lot of box office bombs. Maybe they just don't trust him in that way. They want some fresh blood. But like, the thing about John Carpenter is he's a good filmmaker, but also he loves video games, like you alluded to there. I was reading that whole Variety piece, and he talked about his perfect day, and his perfect day was wake up, watch a bit of news, play video games, watch a bit of basketball, go to sleep. Like, he's looking forward to the Dead Space remake in January. He clearly has a passionate love of this bloody property. Just admit. Come on.
What if he's this is a ruse?
Come on.
He's throwing us all off because he is involved, but he can't tell anybody because he's NDA'd. But if the only way to get around this is to just say, oh, someone else is doing it. And then he's looking forward to the Dead Space remake. He's tweeting about Dead Space. And then he goes, hey, by the way, guys, I'm actually doing it.
I'd take that.
Him and Cody on the EP.
It would probably be, let's face it, Scott, if this ends up happening, it'll be an Amazon Prime exclusive, and it will look like Amazon Prime sci-fi show or the Halo show, which looks like an Amazon Prime sci-fi show.
To be fair, Amazon also have The Expanse, which is a very good-looking sci-fi show. Just give it to The Expanse guys.
Okay.
They already do so much stuff about like mining things in space. If you want to get really good, tactile-looking weapons and armor and this idea of space mining and planet cracking and all the Dead Space stuff, give it to the Expanse people. They're already doing something. I forget what they're doing. That's some big deal.
Yeah.
As their next project. But just give it to the Expanse people. They've already kind of proven they can make that look good.
I'll trust you in that.
Not as much in season one, but it gets there. Okay. It gets better. I think season one looked good, but still. Next news thing is a new PlayStation 5 model with a removable disc drive. This comes from Tom Henderson, a notable insider who also has Insider Gaming, saying that the new model has the same hardware specs, but all the insiders that he's talking to don't believe that the actual detachable disc drive will be compatible with existing digital PS5s, even though they are going to be selling the disc drive separately, but it's only for the newest model. It's only for the newest main PS5, which is like, what are we doing? Under the assumption that they don't believe it'll be compatible with existing digital PS5, but that might change with upcoming firmware. But this is like some weird half step where Sony kind of want to push digital sales, because I don't know about you, but I don't know anyone who has a digital PS5. Actually, my brother-in-law has a digital PS5. One human being.
My brother did have it until he traded it in for an Xbox, but he did get the digital version first.
Okay. So I feel like they want to get there. They want to have that locked down marketplace where they can charge you £70 and whatever it is, $70, a digital marketplace that you can't get around in any way. So I guess that's what they're moving towards. But this is a weird half step. It reminds me of that HD DVD thing you could get for the 360.
Yes.
Where it was like a little separate disc drive that like no one bought.
I'm fine with this. I don't think it'll sell like hotcakes, but I like the idea that it's there as an option. It sucks that it's not compatible with the digital versions of the console that are already out there. Mm. But if it saves someone having to buy an entire new machine, if they decide in, you know, a couple of months after they buy the digital version that they want a disc drive for pre-owned games or for 4K movies, you know, then it's good to have. I'm pleased it's there. It's not something that I will utilize, but if it eliminates that issue, sure.
But you'd have to get a new PS5, though. If you have a digital console right now, you'd have to buy this new weird one that assumedly looks very similar just to get your detachable disc drive, or just hope that they fix it going forward and allow it to work on the one that you already spent £500 on.
That does suck. That is the issue there. That is the big issue. You know, they should have made it compatible with the previous models, but, you know, going forward, it's good for whoever gets a digital version in the future, hopefully. But yeah, it sucks that they couldn't make it compatible or just chose not to make it.
Tell you what, I've only very recently started trading games in again. I think it's just a proximity thing. There was in the UK, we have a chain just literally called Game, and there's one of them opened near me again. So I've started trading stuff in again. I like that.
Yeah.
I like getting some money back and then trading it in and buying things.
Yes.
I definitely prefer that to being locked to a digital price thing. So I don't know. I think that like physical trade-ins and whatever, like not necessarily are an immortal part of gaming, but are a worthwhile part of gaming.
Yes.
And it gives the power back to the consumer and you're not stuck with whatever prices they dictate. Like certain things, especially on the Nintendo front, are just £50, £60 forever because what are they going to lose? Like they might as well. And some of that transfers over to the physical side too, but you will get a bit of a discount in the physical thing.
Yeah.
Maybe like a £5 off or something. But I just like the idea of things that benefit the consumer. And I think if they're moving towards locking down their entire economy and their marketplace, that kind of sucks.
I agree, but this to me indicates that they're not doing that, that they're actually giving people the option to then get a disc drive and be like, okay, you want to get back into pre-owned games? You want to get back into trading in games? Mm. There you go, buy this. You want to amend, you know, the mistake potentially of
copy getting protocol for
£10? Of getting a digital machine. He is the solution to that rather than buying a new console. I think it's a move that I didn't really expect. And to be honest, when I was reading about it this morning and 6 months ago, whenever it was first rumored, I thought, who cares? Who's right. that? Who's that for? But now I've actually talked myself into this being a good idea, though it does suck that it isn't backwards compatible.
I see it as them just de-incentivizing the idea of physical stuff and treating it like an add-on and not treating it like a core part of gaming or a core part of something they support. So it's just like, well, we've got, it's like HD DVD, like that died in Blu-ray 1.
Yeah.
It's just that the idea of a removable disc drive, it's like, it's fundamentally detachable. It's fundamentally an add-on. It's fundamentally optional.
Yes.
And I don't like that as a core part of their being.
Is it not better than not having it, though, is what I'm saying now. Mm. Is it not worse in the current form where they have a digital version that you can't get this add-on for and then just a disc version? Because I can't imagine the disc version is going to go away.
Well, that's it. I guess that's the thing. It depends what they discontinue. Because it's like that idea of, like, do they discontinue the physical one and give you this optional thing? And then it's like, is there scarcity around the disc add-on? And, like, there's ways they can manipulate the market. And I just think their end game is a full digital marketplace.
Yeah.
Because this ultimate end game is a series of streaming apps on TVs. And I'm just like, that's your full digital thing. So how do you get a mass consumer towards that? And I think you slowly move them away from thinking about physical products and physical media.
Man, I never thought about it that way. Like, that's such a, and you know, it's a, not saying this is anything about you. That's a mangle
dystopian
of a sentence.
I'm trying to
throw a disclaimer in before I say this, but that's a very cynical way to view this.
I think it's business AF.
Yeah, 100%. Because to me, I think, oh, this is absolutely them embracing the fact that traditional media, as it were, is still around and catering towards that rather than getting you to think about that as being an optional add-on. To me, it's way more egregious to just say, here's a digital console and that's what you're stuck with. That, to me, is a bigger pivot towards the old digital marketplace making this disc add-on.
They could go that way. If they decided to just do that, then yes, that would be them being incredibly cynical. However, I just think under Jim Ryan's leadership, it's very cold. It's a very cold Sony. It reminds me a lot of the PS3 era Sony. It's very business moves AF. And it's very, we're seeing a homogenization of their gameplay styles. You're seeing a lot of moves towards, like, you know, acquiring mobile developers, lots of increased monetization, the PlayStation Star stuff. It, in theory, was started as an NFT project. I see the cold, if I'm reading the tea leaves, they are cold. It's cold tea. Cold tea leaves, and to me, it's not. I get the potential cynicism side of it, but for me, everything else lines up in that direction. And Sony don't feel like a company that cares as much about the consumer, even though that is in itself a gigantic, bigger conversation.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you compare the, like, Shuhei Yoshida era, I forget what you call the dude that came after him, but like the last few years compared to the way Jim Ryan is, I feel like the way he runs his ship is very cold and businesslike. And how do we squeeze these people a lot more?
I'd give you that. I would give you that, but like I said, to me, them squeezing the people would be to not give you this option so that you would have to buy a whole new console.
Well, they still need to massage the people. They need to get there. If they just did it immediately, it would be like some sort of weird Google Stadia move or something.
True.
And I feel like they need to get there slowly. But yes, we'll see what happens, though. This is meant to be coming out across the year, this in theory, new PS5 model. However, the specs are the same internally in terms of how it will run games and everything. It's just giving you the idea, the option to add a removable disk drive. The next thing down, I'll mess up this dude's name, but there is a known leaker of pretty much every month there's a leaker of PlayStation Plus games called Eria Jugones, which is something like close to that will be their actual name. So I do apologize. But they've said that a Metal Gear Solid Remake announcement is coming in February and March. And this also goes alongside Konami producer Noriaki Akamura, noting in Famitsu that the keyword from him, he did this sort of sign-off in Famitsu last year, saying the 2023's keyword is long-awaited. And also thrown in here is that some fans think they've spotted Grey Fox in Fortnite. When the most recent announcement for the newest season of Fortnite came out, the one that has Doomguy and Geralt and whatever else in there, and if you zoom in a bit, there's a telephone box in the background and it looks like Grey Fox is sitting in there. So maybe Konami's doing this triple pronged approach of a little bit of a social media announcement, a little bit of a Fortnite seed, and then sort of getting the word out about the remake.
You might hate me for this, but Grey Fox is such a Fortnite skin, like in a good way. Like, he fits so well.
I've done
well.
Such a face there, and they'll never see it.
They never will. Within that world, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. I can see that selling really well, not even to Metal Gear fans exclusively. I think it'll just look cool within
that
world.
I think that's the end of the world. I feel quite sick.
I think it might be the beginning of culture rather than the end of
culture. There is a character, I don't know anything about Fortnite, but there is a skin of someone with like a like a hole, like a circle on the front of their face anyway.
Is that right?
Which is a bit Grey Foxy. Mm. But I mean, he came first. Grey Fox is a foot. I don't like that. As someone who spent over 100 English pounds on a Grey Fox figure, I can't admit that I bought a Fortnite skin.
People will start coming around your house and say, oh my God, it's Grey Fox. Oh my God. Fortnite.
Yeah. Which they will say in 2040 about every single character ever.
That is actually
because
true.
Because everything is just being enveloped by that thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, what do you think of that as a, let's say this is all true. What do you think of the idea of Metal Gear Solid Remake in 2023 and the idea of promoting it through Fortnite?
Yes, sure. You know, we've heard about the idea of a Metal Gear Solid Remake for so many years now. It was supposed to come at the Game Awards. It was supposed to be announced before even that. I feel like every 6 months, this rumor does the rounds. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, like you said, with Konami saying that they do have announcements in store, that the keyword for this year is long awaited, they must have other things in their chamber than the Silent Hill games that they've announced. And Metal Gear is obviously their biggest franchise that they have right now. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what Blue Point has been working on. So, yes, it lines up.
No, there is also that.
And if they want to do the multiple-pronged attack by, you know, announcing a proper remake and then putting characters in Fortnite, that's back with a bang, baby. That's back with a bang.
If they do the thing where they put Grey Fox as a Fortnite skin in Fortnite, which I don't like saying out loud, that'll mean that there's a whole generation of kids who go, that's a really cool ninja skin that looks like it's very much distinct from Fortnite, but I want to play as that character, and you can't. You can't do anything with that character in Metal Gear Solid other than fight him once and be haunted by him a few times. There's a lot of great scenes there. But
is this true, Scott Hilford? Because what if they roll in some of the ideas from, you know, the VR missions.
I was just going to say, in
the secret sort of unlocks and the VR missions from Metal Gear Solid 2, well, you can get the Grey Fox skin.
I bought that just because of Grey Fox.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Then you can unlock the Grey Fox skin, and then you can play as Grey Fox in the main game. That would be a really cool unlockable. I would like that a lot.
I would like that as a skin. You can do that in Metal Gear Rising as well. But in the VR missions, you got like his moves. You could do the backflips and land on people and cut their heads off and stuff. It was really cool.
Am I misremembering? Because I could have sworn you could unlock the ability to play as Grey Fox in the first Metal Gear Solid.
I completely missed it. I don't think so.
I'm going to do a Google while you keep talking.
Please do. So I feel like I should launch some sort of legal filing on the validity of Grey Fox as an original IP, because that has actually wounded me internally.
Are you sick of talking about the idea of a Metal Gear Solid remake? Because it feels like when we used to talk about Gotham Knights all the time, you know, and it felt like it got to the point where you were just thinking, just announce it already.
I don't mind talking about it because I feel like it's, I don't know, I'm kind of just numb to remakes. I don't like the idea of mining history to pretend it's the future. I just think that's lame.
Right.
So I'm always just like, what are you bringing to the table? And I think as much as like Konami are in this weird position where like we don't believe them that they're back in the game, even though they do have a couple of different old school collections, TMNT, Castlevania, and they're doing all this stuff with Silent Hill. The proof will be in the pudding, and I would rather they had a new IP. I'd rather they give me the next Kojima.
Right.
They greenlight someone who's the next Kojima. And I like that they had Ryukishi 06 or 07 as the codename developer dude doing the Silent Hill stuff. I'm like, that's cool. That's old school Konami. They used to make heroes out of people, like, and then let them lead entire franchises. So that's what I want from Konami. It's not just going like, remember that thing you liked? It's back again.
Mm.
Like, I just hate that in pretty much all media.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree and I don't. I think in the short term, them focusing on remakes and the franchises people love is probably necessary, because I don't even think they're going to get those right. Like, I said this when we were talking about Silent Hill on our predictions podcast, that Konami is in such a space where I think the intent is right. They want to come back with a bang, but they've spent so many years dismantling their position within the game industry and game dev in general that I don't think it's something they could do overnight. So if they announced a new IP that was supposed to be the next Metal Gear right now, I don't think they would get it right.
I guess you just don't phrase it that way. You just go, we're Konami, we're back, we're trying some stuff, and you know, we're rediscovering our roots or something.
See, I think they need to build up. Make sure they get these remakes right for once. For one, make sure they get the other Silent Hill games right. And then if you've proven yourself, if you've proven that you are back in the game, that you can make good games, then move on to the next big thing. Rather than trying to do the next big thing right now when you're out with a game, you're rusty, you haven't had the experience, you don't know if the talent is there.
I'll tell you what's interesting, actually. I'm just speaking of Konami and how much they just steered full bore into pachinko machines. In theory, touch wood and pray to all your gods. In theory, I'm going to Japan at the end of March. I'll finally get to try some pachinko. I'm very curious what the hell that thing is.
There you go.
And whether or not, because hopefully I'll be able to find the Metal Gear Pachinko machine, and I can, and maybe I'll come back and that's what they should be doing. They shouldn't they shouldn't be remaking any of it. They should be steering more into this. Also, you were mentioning the unlocking Grey Fox thing. I think I've thought of what you meant. If you didn't, did you find something from your Google?
I didn't. I couldn't find a single thing, so I might be wrong. And probably
I'm
wrong.
Think what you're thinking of is that you could unlock some of the skins for Grey Fox. You could get his orange one, and if you kept finishing it, you got a red one.
Yes, maybe it is that. Yes,
Could. I thought you meant you could get his moves, which like they didn't do until VR missions on PS1. But yeah, you could play as a Grey Fox skin in the original Metal Gear Solid. Next news story, Dan, which we're not going to detail too much. I want to talk about this in a more wider sense, is that Suicide Squad Killer Justice League's story and everything has leaked, apparently, although it is over on 4chan. So multiple tablespoons of salt, etc. I don't want to talk about the specifics that are in there. I just wanted to touch on where you're at on the Suicide Squad Arkhamverse future, etc. in 2023.
Honestly, man, I told you the other week, I think this is going to be the big surprise of the year. I think you're going to spend the
they'll
next
all be in Fortnite.
They will be in Fortnite. How 100% they are all going to Fortnite. I think we'll spend the next 6 months going, oh, is it going to be good? Do we want the co-op experience? Are they going to commit to the bit and actually kill the Justice League or whatever? And I am confident that whilst the gameplay might not be for you and me necessarily, I do think story-wise they're going to nail it. Just because for my money, Arkham City, Arkham Asylum, and even Arkham Knight have really good characters, really good presentation, really interesting stories, and in general, really well-executed stories. I know you differ on Arkham Knight.
I do.
But to me, they're three for three. Even when they're bad, they're even when they're less good, they're still interesting, and they still take risks, in my opinion, in terms of the stuff that happens in Arkham Knight, like with the Joker and playing as the Joker towards the end. And if they can transfer that over to this game, I think at least in the story, there will be surprises. There will be interesting moments that we will talk about, like we talk about the beats in the Arkham.
That's what I hope is in there, because I feel like the trailers didn't really convince me very much, and then the gameplay stuff just, four-player squad-based, I've already shut the video, I don't care. And so I'm curious what they bring to the table that will remind me of Arkham. But yeah, it was just to mention that if anyone wants to know what the hell's going on with the Suicide Squad Killer Justice League, there are various things out there, however they do originate from 4chan. So there is that, but I just thought it was a worthwhile touching point because that is another game for this year that I feel is kind of getting buried under the likes of The Legend of Zelda and Spider-Man 2 and Starfield and everything else. The last story is from Xbox Era's Nick Baker, who says that, and it's super, super early days for this, but he's heard, according to his various insiders, that Platinum Games are working with Xbox to bring back Scalebound. He said, he's over and over again in the podcast that this is taken from, the Xbox Era podcast, he does mention that this is super early, and Platinum don't know if they're going to be going back from scratch or if they're going to revisit the things that were built and shown off. He says that it's years away, but it also goes alongside Platinum Games apparently rebooting Ninja Gaiden. Because
why didn't you lead with that?
Well, you know, you've got to bait the hook. And so apparently they're going to be rebooting Ninja Gaiden because Team Ninja, in a separate interview, were asked about outsourcing their various IP, and they said they were comfortable with that. And Nick Baker also broke or suggested or whatever that Platinum Games are also handling a Ninja Gaiden reboot. So potential big future for Ninja Gaiden.
Forget Scalebound, right? I've already been too
Ninja Bound.
Cynical and too critical on this podcast with the Callisto Protocol, but forget Scalebound. That thing's dead, right? Don't bring
Stop
that
being
back.
Excited about the old thing.
Yeah, that's it, right? But Scalebound was cancelled because apparently it didn't live up to a certain level of quality that Microsoft wanted to.
Yes.
And even from the first trailers of Scalebound, I don't see that game as a mythical cancelled title in the same way that we talk about Star Wars 1313 or Prey. It looked fine, but I don't think it would have been the next big thing had it come out. Like, there were some cool ideas in there, but given Platinum's pretty dodgy track record of this rare, I think it's safe to say, they are capable of excellence. They have made some of the best action games of all time, and they've made some stuff that they've absolutely farted out that nobody liked and was low quality and arguably low effort.
Yeah, they put a big statement out, and that was after they did Transformers Devastation, TMNT, I think there was one more, and they did a statement saying they're not just going to take on random licensed stuff.
Yes.
They're going to do better. And they've done better since then. Astral Chain's phenomenal. It's just that no one's played the damn thing.
Well, there you go. Yeah, they have still made good games, and I hope they do focus on quality. Like, to me, Scalebound is something to leave behind. Like, maybe, yes, you could do it good, but for me personally, I don't have the investment in that IP that I do with other cancelled games like Silent Hills that I would die to see brought back. It's like you're capable of making great games.
Yes.
You can keep moving on. You can do something else. I'm saying that whilst being very excited about the idea that they might do Ninja Gaiden because I love Ninja Gaiden. So I'd prefer Ninja Gaiden over Scalebound.
Okay,
if one of the two of these were to be true, it would be Ninja Gaiden every time.
For Scalebound, I like the idea of an open world open world game with the combat model from a Platinum game or from a Devil May Cry style combat system in an open world. That's just a cool idea. And Bayonetta 3 has parts like that. There are some areas in that game that are a bit more sprawling, a little bit more laid out, and they have little collectibles and things like that that give you the idea of we've never really had an open world game with a really dynamite, incredible, tight combat system where you could think of really cool ways to have boss encounters happen on the fly or whatever. For me, there's a lot of potential there. However, their team ethos being applied to Ninja Gaiden is also quite interesting because back in the day, it was always Devil May Cry, God of War, Ninja Gaiden that got that whole spectacle fighter thing off the ground. So what would they do with that? I think that's kind of interesting. The whole idea of, for me, it's like a wider question of Xbox. It's like, in reminding people or trying to sort of say to people, the future of Xbox is this, it probably isn't Scalebound unless you really got behind it again.
Yeah.
But I don't know where it fits in the wider sort of Xbox market.
I think to me, the Scalebound thing is more damning within that context because if it was in 10 years' time, say, and Scalebound was back, that would be kind of cool. It would be kind of mysterious. Reviving this really old IP that many people might have forgotten about. Mm-hmm. We've kind of had nothing since Scalebound was cancelled from Microsoft. And that's my issue. Yep. They've released no new IP, no new big blockbuster IP. A lot of their studios that they've acquired are still working on stuff. Mm-hmm. So to me, to have that gulf of nothing since they've cancelled Scalebound and then to maybe announce Scalebound again this year, I would just think, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Like, if Scalebound is the only thing that you have since then, where's the new IP? Where are the new franchises?
Totally.
Like, where's the new stuff? Mm-hmm. I'd even appreciate Ninja Gaiden coming back because that feels like more of a win and not just reviving an idea that you cancelled 5 years ago and you've had nothing to replace it with that's better in the interim years. That's what I think of when I think about Scalebound. It's just like, oh, we cancelled this because we wanted something better. Something better didn't come along. Mm-hmm. So let's just go back to that and bring it back. I don't know. That's very cynical again. But
no,
maybe.
At some point, you're just, like I said, reading the tea leaves. It's like they've not given you much incentive to think that they've got this all sorted. Like, I always used to go back to the way that Halo Infinite was handled, and it was so close to launch. And then they were like, actually, it needs another year. And it was like, how did you not know that until about 2 months before launch? I think it's interesting in terms of like a make good, because a lot of people at the beginning of the Xbox One generation, or I guess about halfway through the Xbox One generation when we first saw it, we're like, oh my God, this idea of a platinum open world game, that's still a tantalizing thing. Maybe it's a make good in that regard. But they did try this with Phantom Dust. They were like, this is this old school IP that we're bringing back. And like, it was like a little audience of 500 people went, oh my God, it's incredible. And then the rest of us went, what is this? And then they didn't follow up on it. They didn't do it right. And so I think some part of them wants to honor that idea of like, we offer the gamers and we have all these old school IP or we have this idea of something that was in motion, we're going to like finish it off. And then they sometimes just don't get there, like because they're not actually that hands-on with the devs, as is evident by the Halo thing or whatever. So yeah, I guess we'll just see what happens with that. But Baker does say super early, it's years away, whatever. And we also have the upcoming Xbox showcase, where even the likes of Starfield aren't being included. So they're playing it very safe. We can end talking about that actually, because that kind of folds into the whole Xbox thing. The fact that what is going to be there is some Forza footage, Minecraft Legends or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's nothing that if someone says, name me an Xbox game in 2023, it's not really them.
Yeah, it isn't, because Forza is going to be a big deal.
True.
Legends has its audience. I think Forza will, because I know a lot of people love, Forza Horizon has kind of superseded the mainline games. This is the most popular thing, but we haven't had a Forza Motorsport in a while.
No.
Like, normally they're there for like the launch of a new console, and it's been almost 3 years by the time it will eventually come out. So that's kind of exciting. I think it will do well for, racing fans and people who might want to pick up an Xbox for it. Minecraft Legends has its audience. Redfall is a game that's coming out. Elder Scrolls Online, but it's
9-year-old game.
Again, it's in my opinion, it's boring stuff. It's established franchises, it's iterative updates, and then there's Redfall, which could go either way at this point. And that to me isn't enough to get me excited about 2023, because we already knew all of those games were coming. Mm. We've already had a good look at most of them, apart from the new Forza, but even that got a pretty big trailer last year, and it's like, I hope they have a few more announcements in there that gets us excited. And I wish they would have had more Starfield gameplay. That would have got me more excited about it as well. Because otherwise, I'm kind of thinking, why are you doing this now? Like, what is the reason for this? Is it just to be more open with how your games are developing? If that's the case, then that's noble. But if it's going to be supposed to be a big thing, those games don't do it for me.
Totally. And they said, like, because obviously the immediate thing was, where the hell is Starfield? And then they got out there and said, oh, we're doing a separate one for Starfield, so like, we'll do something else for that. But yeah, the games that are going to be at the Developer Direct are The Elder Scrolls Online, Redfall, Minecraft Legends, and Forza, and maybe they'll have some surprises or something. But this is a whole separate conversation, but it's just that state of Xbox thing, where if you grew up with them and you had the original Xbox, and especially the 360 era, and then the Xbox One was such a flounder, they're stronger this gen. But I just, like, when they announced showcases or any sort of conversation comes around about what they're putting investment into, I'm always just like, what the hell are you guys doing? Like, and that whole thing about they can't make a game for the Series X, a dedicated game for the Series X, because it needs to have a Series S version, is in itself this sort of hobbling, like, holding them back conversation piece thing that I'm just like, where is your focus other than getting some stuff together for Game Pass and working on your Xbox streaming app? And I guess maybe it's intentional, because they are moving away from this stuff. They're moving away from exclusives and everything. But it's not very exciting.
It's not. And it is the case of, I want to sit here and say, this is their year. They've had things in development for so long now, we should start finally seeing them. Mm. But I've been saying that for 3 years, man. I've been saying that for maybe even longer than 3 years at this point. And I do want to believe it, but I'm almost sick of saying it. At this point, just show me it. And I'm going to stop cheerleading you on in that regard until I see some results, because I keep saying, this is the year of Xbox.
I know.
We're finally going to get to see what all of these studios have been working on. We're going to finally see Avowed again. We're going to see The Outer Worlds 2. We're going to see Perfect Dark. We're going to see Fable. All of these things that have been announced but have had no updates, and it's like, oh, okay, so realistically, what do we have? It's Forza, it's Redfall, it's The Elder Scrolls Online, it's stuff that we've that's already in motion. Like, I'm gonna be stum about it until they start properly releasing these games, and then I'll say, I told you so, it was the year of Xbox.
That's the thing, we've been waiting on that idea of capitalizing on all the acquisitions that they did, because they bought so many different teams, studios, games, everything, that it was like, oh my god, when they start rolling this out, the momentum's gonna be insane. And then it's just been years and years and years of waiting, and then not even knowing if that's what they want to do with those teams anymore. They just they'd rather just sort of archive all that stuff and roll it out on Game Pass rather than make a big song and dance about whatever the next main game is. But we'll wait and see. For now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tailford. You've been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tailford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.